getting close.
Okay. Well, we can stop.
Getting a bit tired.
Okay.
I think we're talking about, he was a very conservative, reactionary, prejudiced person. I knew him for years, and no question about his attitude toward black people and upholding law through the police.
Okay.
No doubt about that. So the defendants waived the jury, and the prosecution let it go. So it was tried before this judge. Obviously, all set up that it would be assigned to him. It wasn't just assignment, blind assignment. So he tried the case. Prosecutor did, maybe he did the best he could, I don't know. But he certainly didn't have his heart into the thing. But it wouldn't have made any difference. At the end of the case, the judge issued an opinion in which he blamed the NAACP and the lawyers whom the NAACP sent the people to for a lawyer, mainly Moore Sugar's Law Office, Pink NAACP, I think they called it, and the Sugar Law Office, I forget how he described Sugar, and myself, who was in the case from the outset, you know, and excoriated us and the NAACP for herding these people and the witnesses into the office where I interviewed them, and defended the police and their actions, exonerated them completely. This is the outcome of a case where this young kid was killed without any cause, reason, or legal excuse. It ends up in our society at that time, as late as early 1950s, with the court, judicial system, exonerating the police, condemning those who sought to give them legal protection and legal assistance. That was typical of the system of justice in so many of its aspects at that time, and more so, much more so, before then. This, give me this latest 1950s, early 50s, how this justice could occur. Nobody did anything but praise the judge. I mean, nobody in the press. So that was one case. Another one that occurred just after the war, the end of the war, a civil case. A group of black businessmen decided they were going to buy Blossom Heath, which was had been a Gratiot Avenue, which was a dancing place and a nightclub, you know, fancy entertainment, other things. And then it finally passed the day when it was serving that purpose, and all was empty. And so they bought it, a group of black businessmen, to set up a place that they thought would be suitable for black people who had enough money to be able to go to a nice nightclub and see entertainment, dance, things like that. A good idea. So when that was, when they agreed to buy it, did buy it, the county then changed the restrictions.
The zoning?
So that this could be used only for some public purpose. They offered to buy it. They really offered to pay them on that. They came to me for representation. That's how I know about it. And they offered to buy us out and make a little profit. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Raisin in the Sun?
No, not, I didn't.
You never saw that?
No, I never saw Raisin in the Sun.
Ah, I just saw it again.
Did you?
A couple of weeks ago. You have to see
okay.
that. That's great.
I'll make a note.
Yes.
I'm sure I can get a movie of it. I can get a video of it.
Yeah, you can get a video cassette. Yeah. That's what I heard last time I saw. And at any rate, one was customary, a white person, a black person moves into a white neighborhood. They have a mm-hmm. neighborhood association,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
then they offer to buy him out, so you don't want to come to him there.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you have neighbors who don't like
right.
you? Don't like
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So here they are. They didn't want it. They said, we're going to fight for our right. So we then started a lawsuit
mm-hmm.
to get an injunction to prevent them from
mm-hmm.
changing it. And for damages, whatever. And when the hearing came up before the township, township or the city or the county board,
mm-hmm.
anyway, to approve this
mm-hmm.
building of this nightclub,
mm-hmm.
the reopening it as a nightclub. We came out, there was an evening meeting. I came out with the two of the officers of the association and myself. And when we came there at night, couldn't park. There were just mobs of people all around and cars. And we found out what it was. Everybody had been ordered to come out and make their presence known and stop this. And we, the kind of faces I saw
mm-hmm.
as we were walking through the
mm-hmm.
crowd, the kind that I used to see in the South,
mm-hmm.
customarily saw down there. Angry.
What was the year?
This was somewhere about 1946,
mm-hmm.
47, something
mm-hmm.
there. And we got in there, we were surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of us didn't really knew whether we would ever get out of there or not. And of course, the board was sitting there, they knowing too.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know if they would ever want to side
mm-hmm.
with us,
yeah.
whether they'd ever get out alive either. So we made our pitch and our argument in this hostile atmosphere. Of course, they decided
mm-hmm.
right there against us.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't.
The board, what?
The
who
board.
The board of.
Members of the board. I don't know whether it was.
Of the people that owned it, had owned it?
No, this was, we had to get permission
mm-hmm.
from this commission
okay.
to allow this to be opened up as
okay.
a dance hall.
Okay.
And the city came there, I forget if it was the city, the county, or township,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, the governmental agency
mm-hmm.
to determine whether to grant us a license
mm-hmm.
or not.
Was this in Detroit?
No, this was in Macomb County.
Okay.
So
that was really daring, wasn't it?
So that's when we started the lawsuit and came up for a hearing
mm-hmm.
before a judge in Mount Clemens, where racial segregation is complete, was complete at that time, and where blacks were treated like subhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Sense that they, like they were in the South,
mm-hmm.
just like it's segregated mm-hmm. everything in the South. And so that case went up to the Michigan Supreme Court. The
mm-hmm.
judge turned us down. We appealed to the Michigan Supreme Court. They turned us down up there. But, you know, it gives you an idea
mm-hmm.
of the system of justice in
mm-hmm.
the town. And the attitude toward blacks.
Mm-hmm.
It was only 2 years later, 1948, that the United States Supreme Court held that these covenants,
restrictive covenants,
racial covenants, mm-hmm. Restrictive racial covenants mm-hmm. and deeds were unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. At that time, black community had to remain in that community pretty much, mm-hmm. except for an isolated instance mm-hmm. on that, like the Sweet case in 1925. But from 1948 on, it had become unconstitutional, and then the effort of black people to move out had to move in different directions, and it was a gradual, slow, difficult mm-hmm. process.
Do you have any? I'll stop after I ask you one more question. Do you have any idea, what is your feeling about why people feel this way about other people?
You mean
why do
whites
people
about
have,
blacks?
Yeah, or, you know.
Blacks against whites?
Whites against blacks, or ethnic groups against ethnic groups. Why are people so threatened? Why do you feel people are so threatened by people who are different from them?
Well, I think you have to distinguish blacks from other people, ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between different groups is congenital, I think, with the human race.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are different,
mm-hmm.
treated different.
Mm-hmm.
Process of becoming a part of a group that's
mm-hmm.
that has a unified
mm-hmm.
whole tradition, culture,
mm-hmm.
background is always a process, and sometimes
mm-hmm.
it takes time. But like the Swedes, like the Germans and the Swedes, the Irish, and the Poles.
Mm-hmm.
Ethnic. There was assimilation over a
mm-hmm.
period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It took more or less, depending upon the perceived threat of this group
mm-hmm.
to their jobs,
right.
to their culture,
right.
to the value of their houses.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of blacks, our attitude is based upon a culture which is deeply rooted in black, equivalent to a slave,
mm-hmm.
the slave culture. And that's so ingrained
mm-hmm.
in our culture
mm-hmm.
and in most of the other white cultures of
mm-hmm.
the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's some difference. But if you dig far enough, you'll find it's still there in England,
mm-hmm.
for instance,
yeah.
which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a liberal tradition.
Yeah.
And in Russia,
mm-hmm.
and even in China,
mm-hmm.
All these instances,
mm-hmm.
They arose. So it's a part of culture as a whole, white versus black, particularly Western kind of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And more particularly United States culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, England didn't have slavery. They had the almost
mm-hmm.
equivalent of it.
Mm-hmm.
France didn't have slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't based upon black and white either.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't eradicate this 400 years
mm-hmm.
of slavery,
mm-hmm.
which makes a distinction between the white and the black color,
mm-hmm.
which emphasizes all the other attitudes
mm-hmm.
and makes it something different from and greater than the kind of difficulty that
mm-hmm.
people generally have in interrelating
mm-hmm.
Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
It's also true in a different sense with Jews
mm-hmm.
because of their religious
mm-hmm.
tradition and
mm-hmm.
background, and the attitude of the Christian church toward
mm-hmm.
Jews and the discrimination oppression of Jews for centuries,
yeah.
you know,
mm-hmm.
way before this, which included France and England,
mm-hmm.
Germany, Russia, almost all the other countries. So Jews have a history which is ingrained into culture, which cannot be eradicated in any short period of time, or even if you, depending on whether you consider 500 years short or long, you know. That would be my answer to that particular question.
Okay.
I think maybe you better
stop.
If you want any more, I've handled 4 court martial cases. One right after the World War, right up to the war. Black person from Detroit sentenced to hang. How that case developed. That was 1947. I handled another one involving a black GI from Texas who was in Germany, charged with murder. And I went there to defend him in a racial issue within a racial context. And then I defended another GI, black GI from Detroit, son of a minister here in Vietnam. I happened to be the first civilian lawyer who went there to defend the GI. And then the last one was in Germany again, from black GI from Detroit. There are these 4 cases. The one of most interest actually was the first one, because it was a case of cheap national publicity and helped to change the court-martial statutes. And that I just mentioned that as one area of work that I found race a very important factor. I was main counsel in the Black Panther case. It was 1970, which is shortly after the 1967 uprising, which had very important political and racial overtones. It was an important case, and it also showed what happened when the new jury system came into effect, where jurors represent the community.
Who did they represent before that?
Pardon?
You said it was the new jury system?
Yeah.
What was the old jury system?
The old jury was almost all white.
Okay. How did they pick them?
Well, they pick them in different ways. Mainly it would be the combination of judges and public officials and others, and take them off the voters list, but they'd end up with very few black people on the panel.
And when did the jury system start representing the general public?
Where they truly represented that was at about the same, was it just before the 67 uprising? Yeah, somewhere just before.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, that was a very important development here that occurred. So it's worth talking about it someday. But then another case of, I think, some significance was involving the black community, was the Attica case. You heard of Attica? One of the defendants was tried in Buffalo, was a fellow who used whose name was Sobel, really, but who'd adopted the name of Shango Bahatuk Ekawani. He was in Detroit, and his mother was a lay minister.
Mm-hmm.
And then that case said, it happened to be the one single case in the, all the Attica cases that was the most important one that mm-hmm. ultimately caused the dismissal or disposal of all of the others.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there to try it. I think that's an important case. And he was acquitted at the end. One of the most difficult cases I've ever had tried, it may be some interest.
Mm-hmm.
Now you want to go back further.
Yeah.
67 was the
end. Yeah, but you can really, you can stop if you're tired.
No, I'm not going to go into that.
Okay.
I'm just telling
okay.
you.
Okay. Okay.
Sort of think about it.
All right.
Then we're forming a black law firm here. Your law, the interracial law firm here in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
That's been written about before,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't make any difference, you, as you're concerned.
No, no. I think, you know,
some
maybe another time I'll ask you in detail about that.
I've written about and mm-hmm. some of
yeah. Yeah, this I'd like to, I'll ask you about another time. Maybe.
So those are
mm-hmm.
a few other
okay.
things.
Now, when you came on last week, you'd brought a whole folder full of stuff. What was in that?
Oh, I just pulled together the material and some photos.
You think there would be some things that would be useful for
if you want
publication?
Some photos?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll bother you another time.
I'll try to get them
okay.
together again.
Mm-hmm.
I can
okay,
do it.
I'll come back to you now.
Give me a little time, call me up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I thank you very much. You've been very